Imagine buying like a state-of-the-art vault for your business.
Right, the kind with retina scanners at the front door.
Exactly. Retina scanners, armed guards, seismic sensors in the concrete floor, the
Oh
works.
yeah, full Hollywood heist movie security.
Right. But then the vault manufacturer decides that the door facing the employee break room, they decide that one doesn't really need a lock.
Because, I mean, if someone is already in the break room, they must be a trusted employee, right?
Exactly. Why slow them down with a heavy combination dial when they just need to grab some files?
It's a terrifying assumption.
It really is. Well, welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. Today, we are taking a deep dive into why that exact assumption that the break room is somehow a safe zone is causing massive infrastructure breaches right now.
Yeah, I'd say it is the single most dangerous assumption in modern network architecture. We're still clinging to this outdated idea that internal automatically means immune.
And the attackers know exactly how to exploit that blind spot.
Oh, absolutely. They count on it.
So, our mission today is simple. We're giving you a concise, high-signal cybersecurity briefing, and we are focusing entirely on defender actions.
Which is so needed right now.
Right. We've pulled together this massive stack of intelligence. We've got the latest CISA advisories, threat reports from BitSight, research from Aligo Security, policy updates directly from GitLab, and active threat intel from WordFence.
That is a lot of ground to cover.
It is, but we are cutting through all the noise. You need to know what is actively being exploited, how the attackers are doing it, and, well, what you need to do to protect your environments right now.
And looking across all these sources, the overarching theme is just impossible to ignore.
Yeah.
Today's briefing is essentially a masterclass in how our ingrained trust in development tools and, custom configurations continually leads to catastrophic remote code execution and data loss.
Yeah, we have three massive vulnerabilities on the docket today. We're covering AI workloads, source code repositories, and web content platforms.
And we're talking severe CVSS scores here.
Oh, definitely. Ranging from 9.4 to a near perfect 9.8. Okay, let's unpack this and jump right into our first threat. We're starting with CVE-2025-62593.
Ah, right. The Ray framework.
Yeah, this is a CVSS 9.4 critical flaw. Now, if you aren't hands-on with AI infrastructure, Ray is this hugely popular open-source Python-native distributed computing framework.
It's essentially the engine designed to scale massive artificial intelligence and machine learning workloads.
Gets everywhere. It has over 43,500 GitHub stars. It's been forked over 7,900 times. And CISA just added this to their known exploited vulnerabilities catalog.
Yeah, and this vulnerability perfectly illustrates our break room vault analogy from earlier.
Oh, so?
Well, the core issue stems from a long-standing design decision by the Ray development team. They decided to just skip authentication entirely on critical API endpoints.
Wait, entirely. Which endpoints?
Specifically, the /ap/jobs and /ap/job/agent/jobs endpoint.
No password required at all.
None. Their logic was that Ray is typically run in a local development context or, on a heavily segmented internal network.
So they assumed they didn't need the rigorous access controls of a public-facing production server.
Exactly. They assumed the break room was safe.
But if I'm a listener, right, and I'm running a local development environment right now, I'm probably wondering how a random external attacker reaches my private, unauthenticated backend.
Right, it seems isolated.
Because the briefing notes explicitly say this happens via web browsers, like Firefox and Safari. How does a lack of authentication on a backend AI framework turn into an attack vector through my web browser?
What's fascinating here is that the attacker isn't breaking through your firewall. They're actually turning your developer's own web browser into a weapon. In cybersecurity, we call this a confused deputy attack.
A confused deputy. I like that.
Yeah, your web browser has legitimate, privileged access to your local machine and your internal network. The attacker just has to trick your browser into doing their dirty work.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand the mechanics of that. Are you saying a developer sitting in their office writing code for an AI cluster just has to open Firefox for this to trigger?
Well, if they visit a malicious website, or honestly, even if they are just served a malicious programmatic advertisement on a totally legitimate news site, the attack can trigger.
Just from an ad? That's insane.
It is. The mechanism relies on two specific discoveries. First, there's a DNS rebinding attack, which was detailed by security researcher Jonathan Leitcha.
Okay, break down DNS rebinding for us, because normally a web browser has the same origin policy, right?
Right, exactly.
So a script running on a random ad network shouldn't be able to just casually read data from my local machine's IP address.
Right, the same origin policy is supposed to be the guardrail. It basically says that code from evil.com cannot interact with 127.0.0.1.
Which is your local machine.
Exactly. But DNS rebinding bypasses that completely. Here's how. The attacker registers a domain, let's call it safelookingsite.com. When your browser first asks for the IP address of that site, the attacker's DNS server responds with a normal public IP address. Your browser loads the page.
Makes sense so far.
But the script on that page has a very short time to live for that DNS record. It quickly forces your browser to ask for the IP address again.
And let me guess. The second time the browser asks, the attacker's DNS server replies with 127.0.0.11.
You've got it.
Yeah.
Now, as far as your browser is concerned, it is still talking to safelookingsite.com.
Ah, because the origin name hasn't changed.
Exactly. The origin is the same, so the same origin policy doesn't block the request. But the network packets are now being routed directly to the unauthenticated Ray instance running on your local machine.
That is wild. The browser thinks it's just loading more content for a web page, but it's actually handing over the keys to the local AI cluster.
Right, and combine that with the second discovery, a fetch bypass found by Avi Lumelski at Allego Security.
What does a fetch bypass do?
It allows the attacker to manipulate the user agent header to bypass basic server-side checks. So suddenly, the attacker is executing arbitrary shellcode on the developer's laptop.
And once they have the developer's machine, they can pivot, right? Like, they can attack network-adjacent instances of Ray running deeper inside the private corporate network.
Absolutely. They use the laptop as a beachhead.
And to be clear to you listening, this is not just a theoretical lab exercise. The BitSight threat report from March 2026 shows that the threat actors behind the RondoDocs DDoS botnet used this exact flaw back on November 26, 2025.
Which is crazy because that was 2 full days before the vulnerability was even publicly disclosed.
Right, so they were actively monitoring for proof of concept exploits and weaponized it immediately.
Yeah, and the Allego research reveals an even more lucrative angle for the attackers.
Oh, what are they doing?
They found that unpatched Ray instances are being hijacked to turn these massive, expensive enterprise clusters into self-replicating cryptocurrency mining botnets.
Wow. Right, because Ray is designed to manage AI workloads, which means it's usually hooked up to incredibly expensive, high-powered NVIDIA GPUs.
Exactly. Attackers are stealing high-value compute power meant for cutting-edge artificial intelligence, and effectively printing their own money.
All because a local API endpoint didn't ask for a password?
Yep, just the break room door left open.
Unreal. So here are your explicit defender actions. If you have developers running the Ray framework in any capacity, you need to upgrade the Python package to version 2.5.2.0 immediately.
Yes, do not wait on that. That update finally addresses the issue.
But the more fundamental takeaway for you is that the mental model of a safe local environment has to die. The web browser is the new perimeter. If your developer's browser can reach it, so can the attacker's.
The browser has basically become the ultimate Trojan horse.
Seriously. Now, if the Ray vulnerability shows us how attackers exploit the environments where developers actually execute their code, our next threat report reveals how they're targeting the massive digital vaults where all of that source code is stored.
Yes. We're moving from AI to source code repositories.
Right. We are looking at a critical flaw in GitLab Community and Enterprise Editions. This is CVE-2026-19478, another massive CVSS 9.4.
And GitLab released this patch entirely out of band on Saturday, August 17th, 2026.
Yeah, a weekend patch.
Yeah.
When a major vendor like GitLab drops an out-of-band critical patch on a weekend, especially, just 5 days after their routine scheduled patch cycle?
Yeah, 5 days. Every security team needs to treat that like a flare going up.
Definitely. What does this vulnerability actually do?
Well, it allows an unauthenticated user to remotely modify or entirely delete public projects and user data.
Unauthenticated deletion.
Yep. And the most dangerous part is it requires zero user interaction. It's executed over the network via a GraphQL directive.
Okay, before we get into the mystery of this patch, let's talk about GraphQL. We are seeing it pop up in so many of these critical vulnerability reports lately.
It's definitely a trend.
Why is GraphQL suddenly the weak spot compared to traditional REST APIs?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to complexity and control.
Okay, how so?
With a traditional REST API, you have multiple specific endpoints. You might have one endpoint to read a user's profile and a completely different endpoint to delete a project.
So you can put a bouncer, like an authentication check, in front of each specific door.
Exactly. But GraphQL is different. It provides one single endpoint, and the client sends an incredibly complex nested query asking for exactly what it wants.
Oh, I see. So instead of checking 20 different doors, the server has to analyze one massive, complicated request at the front desk.
Right. It has to figure out if the user has permission for every single piece of data they're asking to touch within that one query.
That sounds like a nightmare to secure.
It is. Securing that single GraphQL endpoint against every possible permutation of a query is notoriously difficult. Granular access control often gets misconfigured.
But which is exactly how an unauthenticated attacker manages to slip a deletion directive past the server's logic.
Precisely. The logic just fails to catch it in the nesting.
Which brings up the most frustrating part of this briefing for defenders. GitLab dropped the patch. They told everyone to update immediately, but they are absolutely refusing to tell us which specific GraphQL directive is involved
They're being incredibly tight-lipped.
or what the conditions for exploitation are. Like, if I'm a defender trying to write a temporary firewall rule while we test the patch, my hands are tied.
They're completely flying blind.
If they are hiding the blueprint, my guess is they must be terrified of a repeat of that July 2026 zero-day chaos. Is this a permanent policy change to buy us time?
This actually raises an important question about modern vulnerability disclosure. And yes, it is a deliberate policy shift.
Okay, so what changed?
Back in June of 2026, GitLab's policy was to make the technical details of a patched vulnerability public on their issue tracker within 30 days.
30 days seems pretty standard.
It was. But after that July incident you mentioned, where researchers published a working exploit for a self-managed server flaw almost immediately, leading to massive exploitation, GitLab changed the
We
rule.
locked it down.
Yeah, they've shifted to a 90-day disclosure window.
Right.
So we won't see the technical specifics of how this GraphQL flaw actually works until roughly mid-November 2026.
Wow. It's a calculated risk. They're relying on security by obscurity to shield the ecosystem while people patch.
Exactly.
And I should note, there is a secondary flaw included in this update. It's CVE-2026-19650, a CVSS 7.1 high. This one is a cross-site request forgery, or CSRF weakness.
Right. And just to clarify the mechanics there, a CSRF attack is basically another form of the confused deputy we discussed earlier.
Oh, how does this one work?
It happens when a malicious site tricks a user's authenticated web browser into sending an unwanted request, in this case, an improper GT request to the GraphQL multiplex query handler.
But unlike the critical 9.4 flaw, the 7.1 requires user interaction, right?
Yes. The victim has to be logged into GitLab and be tricked into clicking a link or loading an image.
Right. So the 9.4 is the one that should really be keeping you awake tonight.
Sort of.
So let's get to your defender actions for GitLab. First, some good news. If your organization uses GitLab.com or GitLab Dedicated, you can take a breath. You don't need to do anything. The vendor has already patched those managed environments.
Yeah, the cloud users are safe.
This is purely an emergency for self-managed installations. If you are running branches 18.11 through 19.2, you must patch immediately. You need to pull the latest patch release for your specific 18 or 19 branch, which you can find linked in our show notes.
And we have to highlight a severe trap in the release notes here.
Oh, yeah, the gap in the coverage.
Yes. If you are running on branches 18.2 through 18.10, you fall squarely inside the affected range, but GitLab has not extended the fixes to those older branches.
So you're vulnerable and you are currently untouched.
Exactly. You cannot just apply a hot fix. You have to undergo a full migration up to a supported branch and then apply the patch.
That is a rough weekend for some admins out there. On the bright side, for those on supported versions, GitLab explicitly noted that this update introduces no new database migrations.
Which is a huge relief.
It is. That means if you run a complex multi-node deployment, you shouldn't require any downtime to roll this out. So there's zero excuse not to get it done today.
Just get it patched.
So GitLab is hiding the blueprint to protect the backend servers. But protecting the backend doesn't matter if your frontend is cheerfully handing out the keys.
A great point.
Let's look at how a seemingly simple user input field on a public website can completely topple your entire infrastructure.
Yeah, let's talk about Forminator.
We're talking about CVE-2026-15748. This is a massive CVSS 9.8 vulnerability in Forminator, which is a WordPress plugin boasting over 600,000 active installations.
600,000.
Yeah, and this flaw was discovered by a security researcher who goes by Daru, and the active threat intelligence was detailed by WordFence.
A 9.8 severity score on a plugin with over 500,000 active installs is pretty much a nightmare scenario for the internet at large.
What kind of vulnerability is it?
This is an arbitrary file upload vulnerability. It allows a completely unauthenticated attacker to upload malicious executable code directly to your web server.
Ouch.
Yeah. The flaw resides specifically in the plugin's handle file upload function. And the prerequisite for the attacker is almost zero.
What do they need?
Your target site just needs to have a public-facing form that contains both a file upload field and a standard drop-down select field.
Just a standard form? I always love dissecting these file upload failures because it usually comes down to flawed logic.
Almost always.
If it's failing in the file upload validation function, my guess is the developers tried to use a strict block list for bad files instead of an allow list for known good ones. Is that where the defense broke down?
You hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah.
The developers implemented what they call a dangerous extension block list.
Okay, so how did it work?
When a user uploads a file, the server checks the file's MIE type, which is basically a label that tells the server, you know, this is a JPEG image or this is a PDF document.
Right.
The block list looks for specific known bad strings like application/xhttpd.php. But the failure is that the block list relied on exact key matching.
Wait, meaning if the attacker's string doesn't match the bad list perfectly, character for character, the server just shrugs and lets it through.
Exactly. It had to be a perfect match to get blocked.
So how did the attackers exploit that?
The attackers realized they could bypass the exact match logic entirely by using something called pipe alternative MIME type keys.
Pipe alternative, like the vertical bar on your keyboard.
Exactly. In a multi-part form request, they used the pipe character to send multiple MIE formats at once.
Oh, wow.
So instead of just sending application/xhttpd.php, they send a string like image/jpeg/pipe/application/xhttpd.php.
That is incredibly clever. The strict block list scans that exact combined string, doesn't find it on the ban list, and just assumes the file is safe.
Exactly. The server thinks, well, I don't see that exact weird hybrid string on my naughty list, so come on in.
But it gets worse, right? Because bypassing the file type check is only step one.
Yeah. Step two requires manipulating the plugin's public submission handler. The form relies on configuration data to know where to put the file and how to process it.
Okay.
By forging the value in that standard drop-down select field we mentioned earlier, the attacker injects their own malicious configuration data.
And the plugin just accepts it.
The plugin blindly trusts that forged data processes the bypassed file and drops a malicious PHP script right onto your server.
And once a PHP file is sitting in your web directory, achieving full remote code execution is trivial.
Yep. They just navigate to the file in their browser and your server runs their code.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. And honestly, this is the part of the briefing that is going to make system administrators want to scream.
Oh, the configuration trap, yes.
Because WordPress actually has a built-in defense mechanism specifically designed to stop this exact scenario.
It does.
By default, WordPress protects its upload directories with an htaccess file. This is a server configuration file that explicitly tells the web server, do not execute any PHP scripts found in this directory.
Right. It's a great safeguard.
Even if a bad file slips past a plugin and gets uploaded, the server's core configuration will refuse to run it.
But if a site administrator decides to be organized and sets up a custom file upload storage route,
meaning they go into the plugin settings and change the default location of where user uploads are saved.
Exactly. If they do that, that core protection simply vanishes.
Because the default WordPress helper function that writes that protective htaccess file doesn't know about your shiny new custom folder.
Right. It only protects the default directories.
By customizing your storage path to keep your server more organized, you inadvertently strip away the default security guardrails that would have saved you from this 9.8 vulnerability.
It is the ultimate configuration trap. The administrator thinks they are implementing a best practice by organizing their file system, but they're actually disarming their own security alarms.
It's heartbreaking, honestly.
It really is.
Yeah.
Without that htaccess file present in the custom directory, the attacker uploads their bypassed PHP file, requests it via their browser, and the web server happily executes the malicious code.
So let's get to your defender actions for Forminator. First, the vulnerability impacts all versions of the plugin up to and including 1.56.1. You need to update to version 1.56.2, which was released back on July 31st, 2026.
Update immediately.
But more importantly, you need to audit your WordPress custom storage configurations immediately. If you have ever moved your upload directories from their default locations, you need to manually verify that you have htaccess files or equivalent server-level configurations if you run Nginx-blocking PHP execution in those specific custom directories.
Yeah, do not rely on the plugin or the core software to magically do it for you.
check it yourself.
It really is a perfect synthesis of today's intelligence, isn't it?
How do I mean?
Whether we're looking at an advanced AI framework like Ray, a massive enterprise code repository like GitLab, or a simple contact form on a WordPress site, the root cause is identical.
It's that assumption of trust.
Exactly. It's a fundamental failure to properly authenticate users and validate inputs. And critically, these catastrophic failures are happening in the exact areas that developers and administrators assume are internal or custom or safe.
So what does this all mean for you, the defender trying to keep the lights on? It means the old mental models have to go.
They absolutely have to go.
You have to operate under the assumption that your developers' web browsers, your complex backend APIs, and your neatly organized custom storage paths are all actively hostile territory.
Right. The perimeter isn't just the edge firewall anymore.
No, the perimeter is every single endpoint, every browser tab, and every line of code that processes a piece of external data.
The assumption of trust is the most easily exploited vulnerability in modern network architecture.
Which brings us back to the break room inside that high-tech vault. We spent years building thicker concrete walls and better retina scanners for the front door, but we completely ignored the side entrance because we assumed anyone inside the building was a friend.
And the threat is already sitting in the break room.
It really is. And that leaves us with a pretty heavy question to ponder as we close out today's briefing. If developers are increasingly becoming the weakest link with their very own web browsers being weaponized through DNS rebinding to attack local development tools like Ray, how long until our local laptops require the exact same draconian zero trust lockdowns as our public-facing production servers?
It's a scary thought.
Will the concept of local development even exist in a few years? Or will every single keystroke, every POTUS, and every compiler have to be isolated in a cloud container just to keep the enterprise safe?
We might already be heading there.
Something to think about as you patch those servers and check those configurations today. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay informed, stay vigilant, and we'll see you next time on Cyber Mornings Daily.